Blog Talk Radio.
Internet.
Yeah.
All right.
Wrong one? Was that the wrong one?
Could be. All right. So there, you heard part of the theme. Good old Bob turned green again. That's a shame.
Yeah, he did.
The rest of us have icons. Welcome to the show.
Oh.
This is Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by
Gary Binkley from Wearing This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And hurrying to sign in to the Eerie House page is...
It is I, Garth Gold. Blay. There you go.
Yep. And CW would be joining us, but she got stuck in some sort of employment, hopefully for profitable gain. But she is listening. So, hey, CW, thanks for joining us there.
That means we have to watch what we say again. We know she's listening.
Oh, yeah, she put the nun picture up. She's listening. I know she's listening. She's got a yardstick that'll rep your knuckles, boys and girls, let me tell you. And
all right,
now
I was just
going to
tell you about
the
nun
the
thing.
Too. All right, sorry, Gar, go ahead.
I was going to tell you about that nun thing, but I'll tell you later. I forgot what we were talking about. So many things.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep.
We gotta quit acting up. A friend of mine.
No, we don't. Not tonight. We don't.
Yeah, I know. A friend of mine, Gar. About the nun topic, Gar. A friend of mine was in a band called Nun Fist. It was like a heavy metal copy band, although they had a few of their own songs. And like the lead singer dressed up like a priest. The one guitarist had like a Satan mask. Or no, excuse me. The guitarist was a nun with a yardstick. The drummer had the Satan mask. Yeah, and they were called Nun Fist. Like, and they had songs like Sister Mary Bloody Knuckles, you know. It was a lot of fun.
In high school, already I knew I wasn't part of the game. In high school, I was in drama. I was in drama, and I got a part in a play as a priest, and I was like, I don't know about this. I don't know about this, guys. This was in high school. I was already like, I don't know. That
for
I
you, that's some,
stood up there.
Yep.
For you, that's some acting.
In some parts of the country, it's known as drama.
Drama. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
if you take too much, you take some Dramamine.
That's true.
I'm not near the boinger. Well, I'll give you this. All right, there you go.
Ow, hey, watch where you.
Hey, yeah, I don't know. What's...
Easy, Harpo.
Easy, Harpo. I need a softer bell horn.
Three radio programs tonight.
Yes, three.
Whole lot of radio.
Three. There you go.
And horns.
Three horns.
And of course, we are acting up because it's all about acting tonight. We've got Night Beat, 11th Hour, and Damon Runyon Theater, which of course is one of my faves. I love that character, Broadway. He's the best. He's the best.
I think we got to start there. Start with some levity there. Yeah. Some fun.
We could do that if you like.
Yeah, I like.
Oh, I'm wrong.
Any interesting trivia on this one, Dave, or factoids that you'd like to share with the...
On this particular one? No, on the whole Damon Runyon thing, it's just so great. The characters he comes up with, these are like 1920s mob type people and things like that, and they're all... have these fun names. They're all unique people. They're all completely different. But their names, Apple Annie and all these different things like that, they're just great characters. And
yep.
The acting is wonderful, and you really get the feel of being down in New York in the 1920s, I think.
And is not Broadway one of my favorite radio actors, Dave?
He is, because he's the same guy that did not only Gillis, the next born neighbor of Life of Riley, he was also in that same program. He was the friendly Undertaker. So he had two roles during that. John Brown, yeah. He did a lot of things. He was Irma's boyfriend and my friend Irma. So he was all over the place.
Well, he's a fine radio actor in this lovely episode of Damon Runyon Theater called Broadway Complex.
Curious note that John Brown in these radio plays who portrayed Broadway also doubled as the host and or narrator.
There you go. There's a fun fact for you.
There you go. For Broadway Complex, originally broadcast.
Oh, where is it? There it is. March 17th, 1949.
And put on your socks, too.
The Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master storyteller, Damon Runyon. And this one, Broadway Complex. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. It is along toward 4 o'clock one morning, and I am sitting in Mindy's restaurant on Broadway with Ambrose Hammer, the dramatic critic. We are talking of this and that when Ambrose looks toward the door and says as follows.
Broadway, who's that guy coming in now?
That? He is a citizen named Cecil Earle.
Funny, I've never seen him before.
He is what is called the master of ceremonies at the Golden Slipper.
Oh. Looks like he's sleepwalking.
He is a very odd character.
What's the matter, Broadway?
I do not like this, Ambrose. Cecil is heading for that table at which are sitting...
Louis the Lug, Angie the Ox, and Upstate Red.
In his right mind, Cecil Earle would walk 10 miles to keep away from their shadows. Look, he is reaching inside his coat.
For a gun.
Well, I expect any second to see Cecil Earle do a foldo and join his deceased relatives, because anybody who reaches inside his coat within eyesight of any one of the three citizens above mentioned can also reach for a lily. He is going to need it. But what happens is something different, and which I will tell you in a minute.
Now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, Broadway Complex.
Well, what happens is this. Before Cecil Earle is able to reach the table he is heading for, Ambrose Hammer pops out of his chair and collars him. Ambrose brings him to our table. And what goes on is this.
Okay, son, sit down, take it easy.
You should have let me go. I'd have cooked those babies right here and now.
Huh? Cecil, what are you talking about? Who do you think you are?
Who are you?
Me? Look at me.
I I know you.
Sure you do, Cecil. Ambrose, what is this?
I'm not quite sure, Broadway. Cecil.
Yeah?
What were you going to do a minute ago?
Do? I cool off those citizens.
Why?
For muscling in on my territory.
Ambrose, this guy is as wobbly as a 10-cent bicycle. He is nobody but Cecil Earle, and he has no territory.
Mm-hmm. Cecil?
Huh?
Who are you?
Me? Why, I'm...
He does not know who he is.
Yes, he does. Now look, Cecil, you're Cecil Earle, remember?
Earle? Well, who says I'm not?
You do.
Broadway, do you know where he lives?
Sure, over on 49th.
Okay, let's get him home.
So we take Cecil to his hotel, and on the way over, he gets as straight as I and Ambrose. It seems he gets some sort of funny idea about being somebody else for a while. We tuck him in his bed, and I tell Ambrose all I know about him. Ambrose thinks about it for a minute, and then says...
Subconsciously, he wants to be a big shot. He wants to be important, but he's not, is he?
Not in the least. Why?
Well, every once in a while, like that business in Mindy's before, he takes on a character of his dream world. He becomes, well, a gunman, a killer, a tough mug.
All this he dreams?
Yes, but he lives his dreams.
With a gun?
Look, here's the gun he had.
Wait, this is nothing but a water pistol.
Sure, but to him it was a Roscoe.
And he goes to pull it on those citizens? Oh, Ambrose, this can be very dangerous.
Only if the others don't know about him.
Someday he is going to run into somebody who does not know this is all a dream.
So I'll tell you what, Broadway, do him a favor.
Me? How?
Noise it around about him. Tip off everybody that he's like this.
Ah, the poor guy. Just wanted to be somebody and cannot.
He'll be all right someday.
You mean he will get over wanting to be somebody else?
It sometimes happens.
How?
Oh, if something actually happens to make him feel important, then that inner urge will be satisfied, and he'll be perfectly normal.
But what could happen to this Cecil Earle?
Who knows? I've seen a lot of things happen to a lot of people. It could happen to him.
It is not long before everybody knows about Cecil Earle. And a funny thing, even the toughest citizens along the stem play along with him when he gets the dream. Nobody laughs when he is by turns the President of the United States or a big game hunter. Although Mindy resents it a little when Cecil Earle becomes a French chef and takes to criticizing the food. So that is the way things go along for maybe 3-4 weeks. Then one day I am sitting in Mindy's with Ambrose Hammer and we are joined by Cecil, who sits down and speaks.
Hello.
Hiya, Cecil.
Hello, Cecil.
Look, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time now.
About what, Cecil?
About me.
What is the matter?
It's just that, well, I thought maybe I ought to go away.
Go away? Why?
You know.
Anybody say anything to you?
Oh, no. No, that's just it. Nobody does.
Oh, I see.
I know I make an idiot of myself when I get one of those...
Forget it, Cecil.
Sure, forget it.
Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be somebody. I never was. What am I now? A master of ceremonies in a nightclub.
But you're a good one.
Maybe, but...
Look, Cecil, believe me, when I tell you there are plenty of citizens along this stem who wish they are somebody they are not. Only they do not admit it.
You guys as well. Well, that...
What's the matter?
Look, that's Fergus Appleton coming in.
There is one guy I wish was somebody else, preferably in the dead past.
He's a great actor.
You do not like him, Ambrose?
I loathe him. In addition to being a bad actor, he smashed in my derby hat the other night.
Huh? Why, what has he got against derbies?
The fact that I was wearing one and the fact I panned him in his new play, Never Never.
He's a great actor.
If you ever become him, I wash my hands of you for good.
He sees you, Ambrose.
He's going to rub it in.
Will you introduce me to him?
What for?
Sure we will, Cecil.
Hello, gentlemen. Mr. Hammer accepted.
Just counting me out of your greeting brightens my day, you ham.
Sour grapes, eh, Hammer? You can never pick a hit, can you?
I'll go away.
No, I think I'll sit down.
Goodbye.
So long.
Mr. Appleton.
Yes? Who are you?
Come on, Cecil. I want to talk to you.
But I'd like to talk to Mr. Appleton.
Say, aren't you the chap who... Oh, of course. I've heard about you. You've been pointed out to me.
I have?
Cecil, let's get going.
Yeah, come on, Cecil.
But I want to talk to Mr. Appleton.
Certainly. Go away, Mr. Hammer. Napoleon wants to talk to me.
Look, Apple Pie, that is no way to talk.
One more crack like that and I'll...
You're what, Hammer?
I'll break your head in.
Oh, I don't think so. You're in bed with your paper now for panning Never Never. Make a pass at me and you'll get the worst publicity anybody ever had.
Look, Appleton, let this kid alone.
Oh, it's all right, Mr. Hammer.
It is not. Maybe you better come with us, Cecil.
But I like to talk to Mr. Apple.
Oh, it's obvious that Cecil recognizes a kindred spirit. Is that right, Cecil?
I always wanted to be an actor.
Okay, okay. What do you say, Broadway?
I think I will leave, because suddenly the air in here is very bad.
It'll get better when you leave.
I do not like this Appleton character, and I nose around and find out from others that he is an A-number-1 200-carat heel. And Cecil is just the kind of a guy Appleton will make a sucker out of, and does. Seems he gets quite a few laughs doing it. Then I get wind of something that seems more than somewhat fishy, and I tell Ambrose about it. He has it no other way but that I go with him to Fergus Appleton's apartment. When we get there, the door is opened by...
Mr. Hammer, Broadway... Gee, I'm glad to see you. Come in.
Cecil, what are you doing here?
Yes, what are you doing here, Cecil?
Me? I live here now. Mr. Appleton says he'll make a great actor of me.
He told you that?
Sure. But did you come to see him?
That doesn't matter. So you live here now, huh?
Mr. Appleton invited me.
Why?
He thinks I've got talent.
It's a nice place. This your room, Cecil?
Uh-huh. How'd you know?
Your picture in here.
Mr. Appleton will be home in a little bit. Matinee's almost over.
I can hardly wait.
Did he know you were coming?
I do not think so, Cecil.
Say, Cecil, how about a cup of coffee? Can you get one for us?
Coffee? Oh, sure. I'll be back in a few minutes. Just make yourself at home.
Broadway, come here, will you?
What is the idea of you asking for coffee? You know we just had some at Mindy's.
Look, when a guy like Fergus Appleton suddenly becomes a big brother, what do you look for?
Rats.
Exactly. Appleton's never had a thought for anyone but himself.
The only thing I can figure is that he regrets making Cecil a laughing stock and wishes to make it up to him.
Ah, you believe that?
No. Because Fergus does not strike me as the type that ever plays warm for anybody.
Unless he wants something.
From Cecil?
Could be. All of a sudden, we hear that Fergus is treating Cecil like a long-lost relative. Takes him here to live.
What are you looking around for?
I don't know. Maybe a rat. I smell one.
Look, Fergus is due back here soon. What if he catches us here?
We're paying a social call, that's all.
What is the matter now?
Come over here.
What is it you find?
These books.
So, what is so wonderful about finding books? I have a few myself.
Yeah. You see what I mean?
Who is reading this kind of stuff?
This is Cecil's room.
The Criminal and the Criminal Mind.
Take a look at the next two.
Great Crimes of History. The Art of Murder as Practiced by 7 Notorious Murderers.
Keep going.
The Perfect Crime as a Criminological Study. Ambrose, I do not like this taste in literature.
I'll give you 10-1 that Fergus Appleton never read books like these in his life.
But what about Cecil?
Just think about it a second.
I do not like to.
At first, Appleton uses Cecil as a goat. Then he is very nice to him and gives him this room and these books. Why?
That is what I would like to know.
What would you like to know?
Well, well, Fergus Appleton, of all people to meet in your apartment.
What's the idea, Hammer, Broadway?
Oh, nothing, nothing. Just dropped in.
Not to see me, that's a sin.
Oh, you're so right. Well, guess we'll be going.
Just a minute.
Sorry, can't stay, Fergus.
You will until I tell you a few things.
Like what?
Like don't ever come back here again.
It's a pleasure. Come on, Broadway.
Oh, hello, Mr. Appleton.
Did you let these two in here, Cecil?
Huh? Why, sure.
Don't do it again.
But...
Cecil, I'm trying to help you. You want me to, don't you?
Sure, Mr. Appleton. Sure.
Then don't ever let these two in here again, or out you go.
Come on, Ambrose.
Yeah, so long, Fergus.
Goodbye.
So long, Cecil.
Goodbye, Broadway.
Now, what do you know about that?
What do I know about what?
You know, Broadway, I could swear that Mr. Fergus Appleton looked scared for a minute.
Yeah, he does it there. But why should he be scared of us?
I don't know. Unless it's got something to do with those books and Cecil.
Yeah. And he does not like us to know about it.
Broadway, something tells me we'd better keep a pretty close watch on this setup from now on.
Well, very puzzling. I figure Fergus Appleton for a smart cookie. But just how smart he is, I do not find out until later. And I will tell you about it in a minute.
Yes, he will. He'll tell us more shortly. As Broadway continues with his crafty tale. You know, I'd like to hang around that neighborhood. Those are some fun people.
Yeah, they are. Yes, they are.
I don't understand the dynamics of that neighborhood. uptown, lowtown, midtown, I don't know.
Probably downtown.
Downtown.
Would be my guess. Mm-hmm. I imagine mm-hmm. them in a big city, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Dave said, 1920s, 1930s New York with your...
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a lawless time. I mean, you know, Prohibition, a lot of people like to drink. Because as mm-hmm. I have said once before, Mom always said, alcohol is your enemy. Jesus says, love thy enemy. Just following orders, Mom.
Yeah, it does work that way sometimes.
No, but, you know, he had people making gin in the bathtub and going to speakeasies and what have you. So you had a lot of shady
bathtub,
neighborhood characters.
If they make gin in the bathtub, where do they take a bath?
They took baths. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. There you go.
Oh.
God. Oh. Hey, there's Quisp. Anyway,
yep.
Another fine tale of John Brown is one of my favorite radio characters of all, and he is a lot of my favorite characters, John Brown.
What was that?
John Brown. I like him. He's cool.
Oh, John Brown. So, okay.
Yeah.
It ran together. I thought you said Jebra. I said, who's Jebra?
I said, I
really got to get the earwax out, you know?
No, I said it kind of quickly. Yeah. I said, Jebra.
Ah.
That's on me. That's on me. Jebra.
There we go.
Hola Radio, I bet.
Hola Radio.
Oh, yeah. And time for fun, too.
That poor guy's getting taken advantage of, which is not a fun sight, but it happens.
We'll see what they do to deal with it here on Damon Runyon Theater. Sure, let's wrap it up with part two and the conclusion of Broadway Complex.
And now back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, Broadway Complex.
Well, more than 2 weeks go by, and Cecil stays Cecil Earle. He no longer becomes anybody else. But he also seems to be getting more and more serious. And once in a while, there is a look on his face we do not like. Then, one day, Ambrose Hammer comes to see him. He seems pretty excited as he says...
Broadway, I think I've got something.
Is that so? Well, what have you got?
You ever hear of Florence Fayette?
Fayette? Oh, yes, yeah, she is the daughter of Homer Fayette.
Uh-huh. Who owns the paper I work for?
So, her father owns the paper you work for. If you will tell me how that ties in with anything, I will buy you a new hat.
I'll take a rain check on that, but here's something else. About how long ago do you figure Fergus Appleton started his big brother routine with Cecil?
Maybe 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh. And just about 3 weeks ago, Appleton met Florence Fayette at a party.
Look, Ambrose, I will agree with you that some people should not be met. But until there is a law against it, what can you do about it?
I say there's a connection. He starts being real nice to Cecil at the same time he starts making a pitch for Florence Fayette.
I know he is running around with a doll.
Florence! Now, what's the angle? What's the angle?
I think you were out in the sun too long. What angle can there be?
Those books. And you've noticed how Cecil's acting lately?
Yeah. Oh, now, wait a minute, Ambrose. If you are thinking that Fergus is going to put a chill on the Fayette doll...
Oh, what good would that do him? He's not married to her. He wouldn't inherit her dough. Ah, there's got to be something else.
Yeah.
Her father?
Well, her father's not too happy about the whole thing. But what can he do? She's over 21.
Then Fergus does not have to put the chill on him.
Broadway, do me a favor.
What?
Talk to Cecil. Find out what you can.
Me? But how?
He knows Fergus hates me and I hate Fergus, but maybe he'll talk to you. Will you do it?
Okay. Okay, I will try.
Good. Meanwhile, I'll nose around and see what I can dig up.
It is not easy for me to get to Cecil, but I finally managed to catch him in his dressing room one night when he finishes working at the nightclub where he is master of ceremonies. There, what happens is this.
Look, Broadway, I'm in kind of a hurry.
Sure, but I do not see you for quite some time, Cecil. That is, I do not see you to talk to.
I've been busy.
Uh-huh. Busy, reading?
What do you mean by that?
Nothing, nothing. What are you so nervous about?
I'm not.
Oh, I guess it just looks like it, huh?
Did you want to see me about something?
Like I say, just to talk.
I haven't got the time.
Cecil, what has eaten you for the past couple of weeks?
Nothing. What makes you think that?
Well, it just looks like you're acting like a guy in love.
What made you say that? What made you say that?
You do not have to jump down my throat. I just say it.
Why? Why did you say it?
Hey, Cecil, take it easy.
You're trying to needle me, huh? Give me the works, huh?
I am not trying anything. All I say is...
I know what you said. Look, I gotta go now.
Who is the doll, Cecil?
Shut up!
You know, you are not a bad-looking guy. Maybe a doll would be glad if you are in love with her.
Me? Me? Don't make me laugh.
I am not trying. No, Cecil, you are not bad-looking. Maybe this doll likes you, too.
She loves him. I know she does.
But maybe you have got a chance, too.
Against him? Besides, he's my best friend, Fergus.
Fergus Appleton, huh? Maybe the doll is Florence Fayette.
Shut up. Now let me go.
Sure, sure.
My book. Where's my book?
Here, this one?
Never mind, I'll get it.
Here it is, Cecil.
Put it down.
I am just handing it to you.
Give it to me.
Sure. What is it?
Give it to me.
The perfect crime.
I said give it to me.
You do not have to fight for it here.
No, I'm getting out of here.
With that, he bangs the door and leaves. Then I notice that a piece of paper drops out of the book. On it is a drawing. I figure that he will miss it and be back for it, so I copy it and take it back to Ambrose Hammer. He looks at it for a minute and then says...
You know, this looks like the floor plan of a house.
Uh-huh. And there is a name under it.
Menahan. Menahan, you know anybody by that name?
Menahan? No. Wait a minute. I think there was a street in Brooklyn named Menahan.
Brooklyn?
Sure.
And this is a drawing of the floor plan of a house.
It falls out of that book on the perfect crime.
Menahan Street, Brooklyn. Maybe we ought to take a trip over there, Broadway.
Me? Go to Brooklyn?
We've got a lot of loose ends to tie up.
I do not wish to tie them up in Brooklyn.
You want to help Cecil?
Well, sure I do.
Okay.
Now, wait a second. How do you know which house this is on Menahan Street?
I've got an idea. I've also got a few connections. Let's use them.
So Ambrose drags me to where there are maps and plans, and he finds one that matches the drawing we have got. Then I do not see him for 2 days, until one night he puts me in a cab, takes me to Brooklyn, and we get out of the house on Menahan Street. There, the scene is as follows.
I gave a couple of tickets for a show to a maid that works in this house.
So?
So she left the side door open so we can get in.
We? Ambrose, you are never so much alone as you are tonight.
It's okay. No one lives in the house but an invalid woman. She's upstairs asleep by now. The maid won't bother us.
Neither will I bother the maid. Good night.
Come on, come on. This is for Cecil.
I would like to start thinking of myself.
It's okay, I tell you. Like shooting fish in a barrel.
It is open.
Sure, the maid said it'd be. Easy now.
Ooh, it is dark.
Shh, come on.
Ambrose, somebody like light.
Just my flashlight.
My. How well you are equipped for this work.
Let's see. Living room. Just like in the drawing. Piano over there.
Ambrose, look.
What?
Shine your light at the piano again.
Why?
For once, do as I say, please.
Okay.
Fergus. It is Fergus Appleton.
His picture. A photograph.
Uh-huh.
Come on. Take a look at it. Read what's on it.
To my loving wife. Till death do us part. Fergus.
My loving wife. I never knew the rat was married.
The invalid woman, his wife.
Till death do us part. Death.
Ooh, Ambrose, let us get out of here.
Oh, what a beautiful scheme. The filthy rat.
Ambrose, those books. Cecil, the drawing. I get it. Fergus gives Cecil the books to read. He wants to make Cecil commit a perfect crime.
Yeah, talk him into being a super criminal. Play on his complex.
Is that possible?
With Cecil, sure. Cecil wants and needs attention.
Killing somebody is a sure way to get it. The perfect crime.
For Fergus, yeah. With his wife out of the way, he can marry the Fayette doll.
I think I will go back and cook Mr. Appleton myself. After I go to the gendarmes.
No, no, not the police.
Are you crazy? We have got to go to them.
They'll only pick up poor Cecil. I don't want that to happen to you.
No. But can you think of something?
Let's get out of here first. Broadway, wait a minute.
What?
Did you say Cecil's in love with the Fayette doll himself?
I do. Oh, then I've got an idea. Oh, what an idea.
No cops. Nothing but my idea.
Count me out.
No, no. You watch this house, and if Cecil comes near it, nab him. But I don't think he will.
What makes you say that?
Because I am going to do a little work on Cecil myself.
It is very dull work watching a house in Brooklyn. But I do. And at no time does Cecil come near it. 5 days go by, and I'm commencing to think that I will never see Mindy's again. Then I call Ambrose, and he tells me to come back home. I do so, and he makes me promise to be in the 1600 Club that night at a table he reserves for us. So, that night I show up there, and the scene is as follows.
Ah, Broadway, have a seat.
Ambrose, what is going on?
Oh, nothing yet. Oh, don't let Fergus Appleton see you.
Fergus? Where?
That table, near the floor.
And that is the Fayette doll with him?
It is. You know, I did a lot of work the past 5 days, and I found out something.
I learned nothing at all in Brooklyn, but that does not surprise me. What do you learn here?
That Cecil has a better chance with the doll than he thinks.
Huh?
And as for me, I'm going to bust up this guy Appleton's apple cart and get myself a raise from old man Fayette for doing it.
You fix things for yourself, huh?
I never forget me. Old man Fayette might even make me editor. Then I'll can a lot of guys I hate.
Look, what is going to happen here tonight?
It is now 11:14 and a half. In 30 seconds, Cecil Earle will come in. Then watch the fun.
Ambrose, if you are thinking of making a joke of Cecil, I personally will tap your noggin.
Wouldn't blame you a bit. But everything's going to be all right.
I hope so. Because there is Cecil now.
A little early. Now watch.
Should I?
He's going to Fergus' table.
Now what?
Watch.
You stupid fool. What do you think you're doing?
I love her. I love
Let
her.
Go of her.
I am seeing things. Cecil is kissing the doll. He is taking her out of here.
Stop that couple. Somebody stop them.
Come on, Broadway. That's our cue to talk to Fergus.
Waiter. Waiter. Somebody stop that couple.
Fergus, sit down.
You.
Me. Sit down, Fergus.
Let him go.
If I do, will you promise to go to Menahan Street in Brooklyn?
What? What did you say?
You heard me. Now sit down.
Ambrose. What did you say?
Menahan Street.
For the love of... not so loud.
Looks like you've lost a girlfriend, Fergus.
I... Ambrose, why not have a sandwich?
Why don't you lose yourself now, Fergus? Quick, the cops will be here any minute. And anyway, everybody's looking at you. And this is one time you don't enjoy it.
Well, I... all right. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Ambrose, if you will stop laughing for 1 minute, I would like to know what happens.
Well, you saw it.
But I do not understand it.
It's very simple. Cecil's in love with her.
In a second, I will bang you over the head with these ham and eggs without removing the platter.
Okay, all I did was change Cecil from the perfect criminal to the perfect lover.
You what?
Sure. I loaded him up with books about Don Juan. He liked them much better than the others. You know, I think he got more out of them.
Well, that ends the festivities for that night. But it is still not the end of the story. The payoff comes a month later. And what it is, I will tell you in a minute. One One day I am sitting in Mindy's when who walks in but Ambrose Hammer. He sits down and says...
Hiya, Broadway.
Well, Ambrose, I do not see you for quite some time. In fact, not since that night at the 1600 Club.
I've been out of town.
Oh, vacation?
Nope. Looking for a job.
Job? But that night you told me you are likely to be made editor of Old Man Stayette's paper because you bust up the romance between his daughter and Fergus.
I was fired.
Fired? Why?
I did too good a job on Cecil. I convinced him he was a Don Juan, and he was. Florence Fayette eloped with him.
She...
funny, huh?
You're very funny. But what about Cecil? Where is he?
Hollywood. It seems this Don Juan complex stayed with him. In his first picture, he got to be a star, a great lover.
You mean Cecil Earle is now in the movie?
Yeah. And his first picture was a play Fergus Appleton starred in, Never Never.
And so ends the famous Damon Runyon story, Broadway Complex. Listen in again next week for... The Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville, and the story is adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. Vern Carstensen is in charge of production. This is a Mayfair production.
Ta-da! That was a fun story.
You know, I think Fogsling had a great little comment there, but, you know, I wonder how many of these people doing these programs in the 40s and 50s ever thought that people would be enjoying them, 60, 70 years later, you know, than when they were doing them live in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's something really kind of ponder, I think.
Well, maybe people be interested. I mean, we're interested in this stuff, and it's already, you know, was before our time when we were born. The bulk of it.
As they say, lightning in a bottle. I don't know that these performances could be remade without difficulty, which is weird. I mean, they did it when they did it, and it was great. But could they remake it? Today. It'd be
probably not, because it was a product of its time. There was a way of speaking. There was diction and dialect that is not likely to come back. That was pretty interesting, but I'll bet we could learn something further. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never buy a canoe from a used warthog salesman.
Okay. Great advice, as always. Great advice, as always.
Write that one down, Dave.
What? I'm getting a tattoo.
Are you?
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
On your forehead?
Yes.
I would like to meet someone that had a tattoo on their forehead that said never buy a tattoo from a used warthog salesman. I would shake their hand.
Okay. Well, I may surprise you on your front door someday.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah.
You'll know me by my tattoo.
Yeah. I'll know you by your tattoo. Yeah, because I look through that paper and go, wait, does that say son of a gun is Dale?
Yeah. Went to a tattoo artist once. He looked me over and said, sorry, I got to charge you for a 3-2 instead of a tattoo. You know, a tattoo three.
There was a very small, slim opportunity for me to get a tattoo when I was in the military. It came, and in less than a fifth of a second, it was gone. I was like, okay, well, yeah.
I didn't know that there were many sailors that didn't have tattoos. Were you just always sober or what?
Always sober. No, actually, that's where I got my drinking problem from.
I was going to say, what a waste of a military career. What? No alcohol. Come on.
That was where I polished my drinking habit, and then after I got out, I was like, okay, well, I'm done with that.
You polished it.
Never got a tattoo. Polish the old.
I'll tell you what. You guys know that I used to work in nightclubs for years, five nights, six nights a week, sometimes for many years. And you know, every night it was like the bar let you have three beers. Well, and then six people are buying you shots. There was a point when I'm like 3-4 years into this, I'm like, am I going to be able to stop? But when I got hired at the Marriott, you are not allowed to drink there. Oh, and I didn't miss it. I didn't find myself drinking at home. So I guess it was just the environment for me.
Yeah.
Plus, I was younger and I could take it. I could not drink like that now. Oh, no.
Were your bars near a port, like a military port, like sailors come in there, or no?
No, we were next to a VFW, though, although they had their own bar. Now, these were neighborhood kids, like early 20s. You know, in a little close to a semi-affluent suburb. They weren't like filthy rich, but they and like the kids would get money from mom and dad. Now, some of them worked for their money, you know, had jobs, but some of them, they were slobs and they just came in with mom and dad's money and hung around the bar.
To keep us guys in the military out of the newspapers, we had bars on base. So he got dumped there. It was kind of nobody heard about it. You just got taken back to your ship or your tent or wherever you had to go. You know, I'm going to stay there. Like, all right. But, yeah, I never, while I was in the military, I never really went to bars outside of the base.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well, you know what they
how
say.
How much of an
the
alcoholic were you, Dave?
God, it got quiet.
It did.
Yeah,
it
did.
I think I thought I was going to sneeze for a second. So, yeah.
How much of an alcoholic were you, Dave?
actually, my parents never had any alcohol in the house. So I went a little, not a whole lot, but a little wild when I was in college. I learned to drink coffee and beer in college, but not in that order.
Right.
No. That doesn't work.
I was done by the time I was 20. I was like, nope, I'm finished. That's it.
I could never understand. Nope. I could never understand the combination of either beer or hard liquor and coffee. There's nothing scarier than a wide awake drunk. I prefer my drunks to be more like Foster Brooks. Thank you very much. Nice
so,
and calm.
What do we got up next, Dale?
Heck if I know. How about a little bit of Night Beat?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Love this show just because the whole show, the quality of the writing and the acting, and, of course, one of my favorite radio actors of all time, Frank Lovejoy, starred in this as Randy Stone. First episode, they called him Lucky Stone. They never called him that after this first episode. But I just the writing in this was so good, and Frank Lovejoy was just so fabulous in it. It's one of my favorite old radio programs.
CW reports she wasn't drinking.
That's what she says.
Until she joined us, yeah.
Yeah, we'll drive you to it. We'll drive you to it. We'll do our best.
There you go.
As we present these fabulous old-time radio tales.
Is someone getting beamed up? What's going on?
Yeah.
Heavy traffic over here.
Yeah, is this right, Dave, that the Night Beat thing? It was on NBC, and it lasted from February 6, 1950 until 52. That was the longest run.
That sounds about right. And he did do one episode for television on a 4-star theater. I would have gone with it, but the network didn't. So.
And I don't remember hearing this.
You don't remember hearing
this? It was sponsored. Information says it's sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. Can we get a commercial like that?
No, this particular episode was part of the Wheaties Parade of Stars, I believe. So, you know, they had more than one sponsor throughout. And
I'll tell you what, Gar will make it up to you. I will upload a beer commercial. I will try to find Pabst, but if not Pabst, I'll get you another beer commercial. How about that?
Is Pabst the one at the bowl where the bowl comes in and
Pabst
breaks up the
Blue
place?
Ribbon. No, that was Colt 40. No, not Colt 40.
Yeah, that was that. Yeah, yeah.
It was Colt 45?
No,
was
not
Pabst?
The bowl.
Who was the bowl?
I don't know.
Three guys, we can't remember a bowl.
Yeah, start Googling, kids, and we'll come back after part one of Night Beat.
Yeah.
This one's called Twill Be the Death of Me.
Twill Be?
Yep. Originally broadcast
July 10, 1950.
Zero.
Wheaties presents Night Beat. On stage tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, Night Beat, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations. Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories begin in many different ways. This one began when a man who wanted to play king and ended with a real king taking top billing. Old King Death.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
Wheaties flakes are not very large, but my, my, what they have for you. They've got vitamins and minerals and protein galore. They've got crispness and a nut-like taste. And they're flake after flake of genuine fun. Breakfast fun. Like when you slice bananas on Wheaties and pour on the milk and spoon into them and chomp down on them. What could be more eating fun and still be so good for you? Why, every Wheaties flake is a whole kernel of wheat. And you know how much whole wheat does for you. Breakfast of champions. Breakfast of kids. Breakfast of grown-ups from coast to coast. No, Wheaties flakes are not very large, but you dig into them first thing in the morning and they'll still be with you long toward noon. And that's a promise. Buy some Wheaties. Buy lots of Wheaties very, very soon and see how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
Chicago's theatrical district at night is a river of light, flashing marquees and gay crowds. But through it flows a deep current of hunger and disenchantment, illusion and hope. Yes, hope forever dying, but never quite dead. There was hope, a strained, threadbare hope on old Max Saracen's face as I crossed Randolph Street and saw him buttonholing Charles Kelsey. Kelsey's a play producer, currently more famous for the frequency of his marriages than those of his stage hits. As I strolled up, Max had one hand on Kelsey's arm, his gaunt, bearded face eager and anxious.
You should have notified me, Charles. I certainly would have appeared at the tryouts if I'd known they were being held. Surely it's not too late.
I'm sorry, old boy. Oh, hello there, Randy.
Hiya, Charlie. Hello, Max.
Charles, listen. You know my work. Remember my performances in the Theatre Guild Shakespeare Festival. Me King Lear, me Richard III.
Yes, but that was over 20 years ago.
And it was I who asked that grand old man of the theatre, Frank Gaydosh, to take you on as an assistant. If it weren't for
Can't you understand? Henry IV has already been cast. What do you do with a fellow like this, Randy?
Henry IV? Don't tell me Shakespeare on Randolph Street.
Why not? In modern dress and a few sensational innovations that I promise you, Randy, will make Chicago sit up and take notice.
Well, maybe you got something, Kelsey.
I promise you they will sit up and take notice, Charles, if I do King Henry for you. It cannot be too late.
Oh,
you said yourself it'll
Max Saracen paid no attention to me. His haunted eyes were fixed on Charles Kelsey, and his tall, angular figure towered over us as he pleaded with the producer. The old actor had a single-track mind.
I'm sorry, Max.
But I could see that as far as Kelsey was concerned, it was going in the wrong direction.
Johnson.
It embarrassed me to hear him plead with Kelsey for the old man that once been great.
Shakespeare's kings from Priam to Claudius.
I've said all I've got to say to you tonight, Max. Now, if you'll kindly remove your hand from my arm...
I'm not asking for any major part, Charles. The part of the king is fairly minor in this play, but it was made for me.
Max, for the last time...
Charles, please, I need
it. Oh, you old relic, you. Do I have to use force?
Oh, cut out the rough stuff, Kelsey. Don't.
Move! Hey, hold!
The old man changed before my very eyes. It was frightening. He was suddenly a giant, taller and broader than I'd ever seen him, the stoop in his back gone and rage blazing from a face of iron. He stood like a king in majestic wrath, his eyes darting about until he spotted Charles Kelsey pushing his way through the crowd.
Hold, you foul, fat-witted dog! Stop!
Max, wait!
Keep away. Take your hands off me.
Max, don't be a fool.
I'm warning you, Max. I don't want to hurt. Help! Help me!
Max, stop it. Stop it. You're killing him. Max staggered back as I drove my shoulder into his chest, and Kelsey dropped to the pavement, still kicking. I hurried Max across the street where my car was parked and took off just as a cop showed up. When we got out of traffic, I headed out Sheridan Road along the lake. A nice cool breeze blowing off the water, Max. Feel better?
Why, yes, I feel all right. You're Randy Stone, the journalist.
Who did you think it was?
I just didn't. What happened?
What do you mean, what happened? You had a little argument. Max, look at me. Don't you remember?
Oh, what time is it?
Wait, it's nearly 8.
Oh, I'm late. How could I have forgotten?
What?
I was going to see Mr. Kelsey, Charles Kelsey. You know, the producer.
Oh, I see.
He's opening with the production of Henry IV. You've probably heard about it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, look, Max, why don't you join me in a bite to eat at Mr. Joe's? What do you say?
Why, what time did you say it is?
It's about 8.
8. He often works late. Yes, of course. My dear lad, would you mind dropping me by Charles Kelsey's office on Randolph Street, the Warwick Building? I may catch him yet.
Well, look, we can call him up and... Uh-oh.
Eh? What is it?
A police car just pulled in behind us. Some Eagle Scout must have taken down my license number.
What do you mean? Why?
Max Harrison?
Yes, I'm he.
All right, climb out.
What? I?
Now, look, officer...
What's the meaning of this?
The meaning is you're under arrest.
They bundled Max into their car and drove off. I tailed them to headquarters where Max was booked for simple assault, a misdemeanor, and held on $50 bail. I found a telephone and called up Max's home. His wife answered. She broke down when I told her what had happened.
Well, how could he? He was depending so much on getting a part at Mr. Kelsey's play. It meant everything.
Well, Max isn't well, Mrs. Saracen. The quicker you get him to a doctor, the better off he'll be.
Anything, Mr. Stone. Well, there isn't even any food in the house.
Oh,
Max, he's been going crazy trying to make ends meet, trying to pay my doctor's bills.
Well, look, don't worry now. I'll see what can be done. Well, what could I do? Not much. So I went to the office. I touched a few of the boys. There were 5 here, 10 there, until I had it. Then I went back to headquarters. The desk sergeant stared at the money.
What's this?
Max Harrison's bail. You can turn him loose.
I turned him loose about 20 minutes ago.
What?
Sure, Kelsey dropped the charges.
Oh, I see. He must have finally figured out which side his publicity was butted on. Max, go home?
I don't think so. Kelsey sent a limousine over to pick him up. He wants to see him.
Kelsey? Wants to see Max?
Well, that's what the chauffeur said. You know, Stone, I'm beginning to wonder if I did the right thing. The old man didn't seem right in the head. I'm kind of worried.
You're worried. So long, Sergeant.
Hey, where are you going?
To Kelsey's office before Max kills him. I couldn't imagine why Charles Kelsey would want to tempt fate by bringing Max to his office. But whatever the reason, I was too fond of the old actor to have him run the risk of killing a man. I rushed to the Warwick Building, went up to the 10th floor where Kelsey maintained his offices. I was about to go in when the door jerked open. Max Saracen shuffled out, pushing past him blindly, and I grabbed his arm. Hey, Max.
Eh? Oh, Randy.
What is it? What happened?
Huh? Oh, nothing. Why?
What did Kelsey want to see you about?
He offered me a job. A job.
Max.
Yes?
What kind of a job?
Playing a part.
What kind of a part?
I can't tell you. Please let go of me, Randy.
No, no, wait a minute, Max. No, wait a minute. What's the big mystery? What kind of a job is this going to be, anyway?
It could be the death of me. Now, please, let go of my arm, Randy. The death of me.
Max.
General Mills is bringing you Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
You know something? You use up an awful lot of energy in a day. Whether you're mending fences or breaking sales records, writing novels or wringing out clothes, doesn't much matter. You burn it up, like a champion ball player burns it up. So why shouldn't you store up energy, like a champion stores it up? Why shouldn't Wheaties be doing for you what Wheaties do for ball players? Well, I can answer that question. Wheaties should. Wheaties should be giving you vitamins and minerals and proteins. Wheaties should be giving you that early morning energy that helps you through the whole AM. Wheaties should be providing you with crisp, nut-like eating fun at breakfast. And believe me, Wheaties will if you give them a chance. They're not known as breakfast of champions for nothing. Not on your life. Every Wheaties flake is made from a whole kernel of wheat. It counts big in that breakfast bowl. And the more the Wheaties, the bigger the breakfast time help you get. Very simple, really. You buy Wheaties, you bring them home, you eat them faithfully when you bounce out of bed, and Wheaties will give you what the ball players get, right in your own sunny kitchen. Breakfast of champions. Breakfast for you. Just like that. Try them. See how Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
And now, back to Nightbeat and Randy Stone.
After Max Saracen had publicly humiliated Charles Kelsey by attacking him in the street, I didn't think the producer was going to offer Max a job without some kind of a catch to it. And when Max emerged from Kelsey's office, I could see by his face that I was right. The old actor was crushed. I barged into Kelsey's office to find out for myself and to warn him that he was playing with dynamite.
Mr. Stone, no man or woman, for that matter, can cross me with impunity. I keep books and I settle all accounts. Every slight, every blow, every insult, I keep a record of them all, Mr. Stone. I overlook nothing and I repay with interest.
What satisfaction is there getting even with someone who doesn't even know what he did to
you? You expect me to believe that?
Your mind is so narrow it squeezes right through the facts.
I'll remember that.
I wish you would. Max is a sick man. Now, what kind of a job did you give him? Now, let's have it.
Take your hands off me.
I asked you. Why is he so upset?
Disappointment, what else? He wanted the part of King Henry. All I could give him was the job of understudy.
Understudy? Then why the secrecy?
The old ham fancies himself another Barrymore. He doesn't want it known that he's had to accept the part of a mere understudy. It's quite obvious, isn't it?
When is this show going to open?
Oh, in 3 or 4 months, I imagine. You're satisfied? Now get out.
Yes, I'll be happy to, just as soon as you tell me who's going to play financial angel to your Shakespearean clam bake now that your wife has separated her bankroll from it.
My wife and I have suffered long enough from the malicious lies of scandalmongers like you, Mr. Stone.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. What about that well-known scandal sheet, the court record? That separation suit was faked, I suppose.
Mrs. Kelsey has reconsidered since then.
Oh, well, congratulations. You stay married to her long enough, you too can be in the social register.
The social register. I'd express an opinion on that point, Stone, but not to you. My wife's passion for blue blood is a foible outside the realm of this discussion. However, if it helps convince you that we've solved our differences, you might note that we're entertaining tonight with a little reception in honor of Count Raphael de Guidio.
Oh, where did Max go when he left here?
How do I know? Now, will you get out of here?
Yes, with pleasure. I need a little fresh air. Oh, hello, Mrs. Saracen.
Yes?
It's Randy Stone again.
Oh.
Has Max gotten home yet?
No, he'll be home late. He's dining out.
What's that?
He called up a little while ago. I guess you know what happened, don't you? It was awfully generous of Mr. Kelsey. The whole thing was a mistake. He never meant to have Max arrested. But I do appreciate your concern for Max. It was good of you to call me.
Look, who is Max dining with?
To discuss a part with Max for his Henry IV. It's a wonderful break. Just what we've been
Are you ready, quartet? All right, let's go.
Drink to me, darling, not with thine eyes, but with past blue ribbons.
A religious experience.
Cause if you toast me with past blue ribbons, I'll know that your love's sincere.
The beer that is splendid is the beer that is blended from 33 fine brews. And if you serve me sparkling clear, perhaps your love, dear, I can't refuse.
You can serve it with cold cuts and you're to please. Serve it with a dab of tasty nippy cheese. Never food refreshing, it has no cost. And anywhere they have the beer will follow if you must.
I'd run a million laps for a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Okay.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pickled Pig's Feet Eater.
Mr. Pickled Pig's Feet Eater.
Ignoring all you know about pigs and where they live and what they step in, you look at their pickled paws and say, yummy. Craving only the most daring meal, you pass up the cow tongue, skate by the head cheese, dismiss the Rocky Mountain oysters. But a pig's foot soaked in pickle juice, now that's good eating. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Pickled Pig's Feet Eater, because it takes guts to eat those feet.
Thank you, Mr.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, my word. My stomach is churning. Oh, my father used to eat head cheese. That's horrible. Did you know that head cheese was the original shooting title of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah, they couldn't get anybody to go because that name stunk. So, yeah.
Well, there's that great scene with the crazy guy when he was luring the kids from the van, and he goes, my brother makes good head cheese. I bet he does with real heads.
My neighbor in New York was, he and his wife escaped from East Germany before they tore the wall down. And one of his favorite cheeses was a good old Limburger cheese.
Oh.
And we could smell that next door. That's how bad that was.
Yeah. Oh, God. So it's as bad as the cartoons implied, eh?
Yes.
Or the Stooges. The Stooges.
Yeah.
I believe they had
Either of you guys had ever had Braunschweiger?
Braunschweiger? No, I didn't like liverwurst. I didn't like the consistency of that kind of pate.
I don't know why. I ran across it when I was a youngin', and I don't mind. But there's some things out there I would not eat head cheese.
I'm nearly glad CW is not here to hear this.
Well, she's hearing it, but she's not here to stop you. Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
Ah.
Yeah, not her port of fare for sure.
Dave, a little toss really quick on the next one, the 11th hour. I've got background on it.
I'm background on what, Dave? I'm sorry?
On the 11th hour, the next show.
Okay, cool.
I've got background on it.
I have a little bit of background on one of the people in this. You know, I really like the Frogsbane kind of thought of this as a noir-type radio thing. I really like that. That's was a great observation. Anyway, the announcer on this program is a guy named Donald Rickles. Not Don Rickles, but Donald Rickles. And he began his announcing career in 1938 at the age of 11. At the age of 11 at KBPS AM in Portland. Listen to some of the shows that he was announcer for as the years went on. The Whisperer, The Great Gildersleeve, Night Beat, NBC University Theater. On television over the next 3 decades, he was handed announcing duties for such programs as Coke Time with Eddie Fisher, The Tennessee Ernie Ford Show, The Dean Martin Show, The Flip Wilson Show, Sanford and Son, NBC Saturday Night at the Movies, NBC Monday Night at the Movies, Bob Hope Show, Sanford and Son, NBC Saturday, and, oh, we did those two, okay, and Bob Hope Specials. He appeared in sketches and frequently did voiceover work for The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson and did a memorable episode in 1978 with Tom Snyder, where host Tom Snyder and he spent 10 minutes playing the Milton Bradley electronic game Simon. There you go. There you go.
Now, there's some fine television programming.
That's radio gold right there, I'm telling you.
Right there. Time's a-wasted. This second part of Night Beat is a little lengthy, so let's get that in there, and we'll squeeze in one more show after Night Beat. Here's the conclusion of 'Twill Be the Death of You.
So Kelsey had actually invited Max over to his home. Why?
Goody goat.
What kind of web is he weaving for the old actor? Whatever it was, I knew it. Had only one purpose in Kelsey's twisted mind, to destroy Max Saracen, to get even. I got into my car and headed for the Gold Coast where Kelsey lived. I pulled up in the courtyard, went to the door, flashed my press card to the butler.
Thank you, sir. I believe you'll find most of the press people in the next room by the punch bowl.
Oh, thank you for the tip, but I'm looking for one special character, Max Saracen. Have you seen him?
Saracen, sir? No, sir, I do not believe...
All right, I'll look around. He's probably somewhere in that mob on the ballroom floor.
I think not, sir. There has been no Mr. Saracen. I've let in everyone, sir, and there's been no one by that name. That's quite definite, sir. I would remember a name like that.
Yes, well, I'll look anyway, thank you. I shouldered my way through all that soup and fish, feeling as conspicuous in my everyday clothes as a burglar at a policeman's convention. Where was Max? I glanced from one face to another. There must have been nearly 300 of them there. Was he in another part of the house? Had he come in by another entrance? I couldn't be sure. Kelsey was nowhere to be seen either. If he was alone with Max, there was no telling what would happen. I spotted Mrs. Kelsey over with a group of females clustered about the guest of honor. I was heading in her direction for information when a voice behind me brought me up short.
Stone! Well, what are you doing here?
I'm slumming, Kelsey. Where's Max? I know he was coming here.
Charles! Well, it's about time you were arriving. Whatever's been keeping you?
I've been tied up at the office, and then I had to get dressed. Edith, this is Mr. Stone, the Chicago Star. My wife.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Charles, the Count has been here for quite some time now. Come on and meet him. Hurry.
Kelsey, as soon as you're through, I'd like a word with you.
Mr. Stone, you really should meet the Count Raphael de Guidio yourself. He's just arrived from Barcelona, and he's truly one of the most delightful and charming gentlemen I've ever met. A true aristocrat.
Yes, it'll be a pleasure, I'm sure.
This way. Oh, poor man. Just look at him over there behind those palms.
Where? I don't see him.
Over there, in the midst of all those women. They're simply devouring him. Oh, Count Raphael. We'd better go round. Here he is. Oh, Count Guido.
Ah, Signora Kelsey. I am...
The Count de Guidio stood staring at me, a red ribbon of honor, 3 medals decorating his magnificent dress coat. In fact, any way you looked at him, he was a magnificent figure of a man with a magnificent snow-white Van Dyke beard, every inch an aristocrat. Except, of course, he wasn't the Count de Guidio at all. He was Max Saracen.
My husband Charles, Your Highness.
It is indeed a pleasure, Mr. Kelsey.
I have been looking forward to this for a long time, Count. Yes, indeed.
And Mr.
Stone. A Randolph Stone, Esquire.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The Count de Guidio. Mr. Stone is a journalist.
Well met, Mr. Stone. Well met. I have always admired the gentlemen of the Fourth Estate. To hold a mirror to our life and times is a profession requiring discretion, understanding, and perhaps the ability to say less than one knows.
Why, Count Raphael, you're a philosopher.
Yes, I see what you mean, Your Highness. Silence, even for a journalist...
Can be golden, Mr. Stone.
Yes, golden. It can also be yellow.
Oh, I see Commodore and Mrs. Dwight Friedenberg have just arrived. Will you excuse me, please? I'll bring them over.
All right, what goes on here? What's the idea?
Randy, please.
I'm paying him well for this. Will you join me in a bit of punch, Randy? If His Highness will excuse us.
But, of course.
All right.
Come on, have a glass of punch, Stone. It isn't too bad.
You won't get away with it, not after the morning edition.
After tonight, Stone, the more you expose me, the better I like it. You know, it occurs to me that I should have invited you here in the first place. Your presence fits very nicely.
What are you trying to do?
Teach my wife a lesson. Oh, come on, I do say, have some punch.
No, thank you. I've already tasted it.
My dear blue-blooded wife will get the lesson of her life.
Kelsey, why don't you see a psychiatrist?
You do need a drink, old boy.
Yeah, is there a real Count de Guidio? I suppose there must be.
Naturally, he was due to be here tonight, but I received a wire at my office saying that his plane was grounded en route from Miami, Lisbon, and Point Cis. Uh-huh. So, not wishing my dear wife to be disappointed...
Oh, Charles.
Yes?
Oh, I'm afraid the Count isn't feeling very well. Oh, dear, I suppose it has been an awfully hard trip. He has to leave.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry. Where is he?
In the hall. I've had Perkins bring him his things. Oh, it really is too bad with the evening so young.
Max was getting into a big black limousine as I ran down the stairs to the driveway. I called to him. Max! The car door slammed shut. The uniformed chauffeur threw the limousine into gear and spun away as I reached the side of the car. I was about to turn and go back into the house to question Kelsey when I saw the car circle the driveway and stop at the servants' entrance. As I hurried over, Max was getting out and was stripping off his overcoat. Oh, Max, now don't tell me that Kelsey wants that outfit back before you go.
Randy.
What goes on?
If you must know, I'm going to help in the kitchen.
In the kitchen?
Yes, yes, the kitchen. Are you satisfied?
But why? What for?
For $100.
How much did you get for playing the Count?
Also $100. But I don't get it until I earn the second $100.
But why? Why would he pay $100 for a dishwasher?
I don't know, but I've got to do it, Randy. I need the money. You might as well know it. Now go away, please. Let me get it over with.
Okay, Max, but you'll get it over with a lot faster with an understudy to assist you.
An understudy?
Yeah, me. Come on. So this was the payoff. This was the booby trap. I couldn't help feeling it was even meaner than it looked, and I wanted to be around to try to keep it from exploding. We went around and back the servants' entrance and stepped into the kitchen. Servants had evidently been briefed by Kelsey, but they said not a word. They asked no questions. They just stared at us and whispered a little to each other. A stout old dame pointed to the pile of dishes in the sink.
Them there.
Thank you.
What about an apron, Max? You can't wash dishes in that dress suit without...
I've got to, just as I am. It's part of the agreement. I won't kid you, Randy. I've got to do this. It's vital. My wife and I, we've been starving.
You don't have to tell me. Look, when Kelsey decides to get even, he doubles it in spades. We grabbed a couple of dish mops and went to work. Max laughed silently to himself as he worked, silently and bitterly. He turned to me.
A king to a count to a scullery boy in one short day. A breathless descent, eh, Randy?
For my dough, you're still king, man.
Thank you, lad. Aye, a king. You may me glory and me state deposed, but not me griefs. I'm still king of those... Oh, I dropped...
Oh, forget about it. What's another dish to Kelsey?
There I lie like a broken plate, used briefly and then... Life is short, Randy, so short.
So what? It's not the length, but the performance that counts, and you were always great, Max, always.
You're a kind wag, my lad, a veritable squire of the night, a minion of the moon. We're the moon's lovers, you and I, Randy, governed by her as is the sea, for our fortunes do ebb and flow like the ocean's tides, now up, now down.
Well, that's life, Max. It's like sitting in the aisle seat in the movies, past the cleanser.
By heaven, I'll hate you everlastingly if you bid me be of comfort anymore. I am barren, bereft of friends.
But you're not, Max.
I have lost the name of king. My jewels are a set of tawdry beads, my place a verminous hermitage, my rich apparel a beggar's garb. Oh, make foul weather with despised tears. Curse heaven and die.
Oh, he's falling to pieces. I've got to get him out of here before... Uh-oh.
Right in here, ladies and gentlemen, tycoons, barons, and literary lions. Here's the surprise I told you about.
Kelsey, stay out of here.
Hold the music, please. Here he is. Your nobleman from Spain, your aristocrat. The Count Rafael de Guidio in person.
Count Rafael, what's the meaning of this? Charles.
This is the silk purse, my dear. The one you keep telling me cannot be made from a sow's ear. Well, look at it. The sow's ear that you were convinced was the silk purse I never could become. You're born gentlemen. The kind of gentleman I never could be. Oh, no, I'm not good enough. Well, meet him. How goes it, Count? When you're through with those dishes, come out and give these hypocrites some more samples of your wits and gentility. Look at him, Edith. Look! Your gentleman. My hired clown.
Oh, you... You're
Oh, you weak-minded phony. The only thing you've proved is that Max is a gentleman compared to you.
Villain! Viper damned beyond redemption!
Max, take it easy.
Snake whom we have warmed with our heart's blood. Spotted Judas!
Keep away from me.
Will ye bring
Max.
Calumny upon our fair name? By heaven!
Max, don't come back!
Get away! Get away! Put me down!
But it wasn't Max. Someone else, a giant, a king
Let
with
go.
A face of iron.
Let go! Help!
Put him down, Max. Put him down.
I'll make a Golgotha, you grinning skull.
No, Max, don't. Put him down.
When there are devils, cast them out.
Max had lifted him over his head and hurled him through the window to the street below. I clutched his arm and half-dragged, half-pushed him out of the door and down the stairs to the street. I got him into my car and we drove about for a while. He sat beside me staring ahead lifelessly as he had once before that night. The power and the majesty had gone out of him. He was just a tired old man once more talking to himself without making a sound. I stopped in front of a drugstore. I got out and found a telephone. I dialed the Kelsey residence.
Yes?
Who's talking?
Sergeant Charles Inc., City Police. Who's this?
Oh, this Randy Stone. I just left there a little while ago.
You took Max Saracen with you.
Yeah, that's right. He's with me now.
Keep him there. Where are you?
In front of a drugstore, corner of Main and Flower. How is Kelsey? Was he hurt much?
Yeah, he's dead.
I went to the car and sat down beside Max. He looked at me with a strange new light on his bearded face. One that was tragic and far off.
We have lost the name of kings. May golden cup becomes a dish of wood.
Easy, Max.
May one time kingdom a grave, a little grave, an obscure grave.
Max, listen to me. Can you understand what I'm saying?
Nay, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. For death sits within the hollow crown that rounds our mortal temples and grins the buffoon, scoffing at our state. I, a king? You have mistook me all the while, but I only live by bread like you, dear cuz, like you. Give me that man that is not passion's slave, and I will wear him in my heart's core, aye, in my heart as I...
He sat there beside me quoting Shakespeare. He didn't know me or hear me. I don't think he ever saw me.
Once more.
He was in another world,
Once
a world
more.
Of his own dreams.
Pray God for heaven.
I heard the siren England of the approaching police
and
car.
St. George.
And I know that though his body still lived, Max was gone. The king was dead. Well, the lights are winking out one by one from Clark Street with its flop houses to State Street with its glittering shops. Dawn is around the corner, bringing an end to sleep and to the dreams of those who walk by day and rest by night. Well, as Mr. Shakespeare himself once said, life itself is but a dream. But dream or real, we only go through here once. Too bad we don't make more of it. Oh, well. Copy, boy.
And here he is, the star of Nightbeat. That was a fine story tonight, Frank Lovejoy.
Well, thank you very much, and let's thank Wheaties. Wheaties is sort of our middle name this summer, huh?
Well, a nicer middle name I can't think of, Frank. Folks at your house getting the Wheaties every morning, just like always?
Oh, sure. The kids love them. I do, too, as a matter of fact. We got a regular spot for Wheaties on the kitchen shelf. You know, the salt goes here, flour goes here, Wheaties go here, right up in front, of course.
Sure, I know. Every well-run cupboard should have a spot for the Wheaties. And millions of cupboards do, I guess.
Yeah, say, what is it they say about Wheaties?
America's favorite whole wheat flakes.
Breakfast of champions, that's it.
Attaboy. Thank you, Frank Lovejoy. We'll see you next week. Get your Wheaties, folks. As Frank said, Keep them right up in front of the kitchen shelf. Have them for breakfast tomorrow morning. Remember, Wheaties at 7 can help at 11.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's transcribed story was written by Irwin Ashkenazy with music by Frank Wirth. The part of Max Saracen was played by Tudor Owen. Wally Mayer played Kelsey. Others in tonight's cast were Eleanor Audley, Ann Keenan, and Harry Bartell. Listen next week at this same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness.
And this is the Wheaties man, Frank Martin, inviting you to listen also on Tuesday, that's tomorrow night, to the Penny Singleton Show on the Wheaties Big Parade. See you then.
Forest fires, again, are destroying thousands upon thousands of our precious wooded areas and watersheds. 9 out of 10 forest fires are started by human carelessness. Crush out all cigars and cigarettes. Break matches in two after using. Drench campfires. Always find out what the law is about the use of fire in any particular wooded area. Save our forests from their enemy. Next, Alona Massey stars on Top Secret on NBC.
Helps when you have the microphone on. Your house radio probably presents Gar's moral of the story.
Again?
Yeah.
Did you hear me?
No.
No, we did not. We did not.
Some moron forgot to turn on the microphones, but I won't say who. Me.
You'll never get even with the mentally challenged. There aren't enough tiddlywinks on the planet. Flip right over into that.
Yeah, I would have ran that over again, but we're getting a little thin on time here.
So
but that was a great
you got a little
story.
On 11th hour, do you, Gar? Another South African.
I do.
Yep.
I do. If my information is correct, and Transa Park Studios in Sydney, Australia, began the 11th hour show. And it was aired through the Australian Broadcasting Company in the early 1960s. Approximately 52 broadcasts of the 11th hour were recorded for syndication and picked up by the South Africa's Springbok Radio for the 1963 season. The Antransa company, Park Studios, did not continue the project after the first year, but Springbok did and continued to produce episodes through 1971. The U.S. Armed Forces Radio and Television Services, AFRTS, picked up several episodes for broadcast to troops stationed overseas. Go.
Well, that's good news. It's always Dave brings us some South African shows, and they are pretty cool. As he has brought up a couple of times in the past, they had to run with old time radio programming for a lot longer because it took them longer to get TV and make it commercial.
Yeah, 1971. They didn't have television in there commercially till 1971, I believe. So,
wow,
radio was still king.
And with that being said, this episode, called The Actor, was originally broadcast
March 27th, 1963.
I'll buy that.
Prove me wrong.
Time, the silent herald of life and death, success or failure.
the unseen force that measures man's destiny, reaching its most fateful moment as it slowly strikes the 11th hour. Happened if Janet hadn't been in such a filthy temper. Now, let's be fair, if we both hadn't been in such a filthy temper. We always drove down to our cottage near Aylesbury on Saturday night after the show, for we both had long parts in the play and felt we needed a weekend in the country. The play, Murder Without Motive, had been running for 12 months, and, well, maybe it was getting its done a bit. Anyway, that particular Saturday, Janet wanted to go on to a party, and I didn't. We spent most of the evening arguing about it. We both got more and more stubborn. The result was that we finished up by going to the party, which didn't please me, and leaving it after an hour, which didn't please Janet. And because we were so busy slanging each other, I forgot to fill up with petrol before we left London.
Need you drive quite so fast, Michael?
Well, we've wasted enough time as it is.
Oh, rubbish. We'll be at the cottage by 3.
We'd have been there by 2 if you had...
If we hadn't gone to the party. All right. For the amount of time we stayed, we might just as well have not gone at all. Now I suppose you'll moan about it for the whole weekend.
Well, if you will persist in being so bad-tempered,
Bad-tempered? Well, you've done nothing but sulk all the way from town. And while we were at the party, you looked like a regular crepe hanger.
Well, it was dreary and I was bored.
So it wasn't very bright. Is that my fault?
Well, you insisted on going.
Well, I thought Seligman might be there.
Yes, and you wanted to try and talk him into giving you a part in his new film.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Seligman.
Oh, don't tell me you're getting jealous.
Well, we're not that hard up for work. In fact, there's no need for you to work at all for a while. Why don't you have a rest?
And start raising a family. I've told you. I'll think about it.
Yes, that's as far as you get.
Michael! You took that corner much too far.
I know what I'm doing.
And so do I. You're just being pig-headed. Now slow down for this one. Slow down, Michael! Haven't you any... Michael, look out!
It wasn't my fault, but it served me right because I was going too fast. The big lorry was slewed 3 parts of the way across the lane. Quite evidently, I wasn't the only one who'd taken the corner too fast. We hit the rear of it with a glancing blow, shot up the bank and down again, and pulled up in the middle of the lane some 30 yards further on. You all right, darling?
Yes, I'm all right. It wasn't your fault, Michael.
Get out, both of you.
What's biting you? The accident wasn't our fault,
sir. Are you getting out? Or do I pull you out?
Now, look here, I...
Shut up. Move.
Lenny.
Oh, I don't... All deal with them.
Take your hands off me, all right?
Oh, you what? You got it coming to you.
Hey, Lenny, cut it out.
What's the idea?
Cut it out, I said. I'll deal with it.
Don't you want me to get...
I said I'll deal with it. Now, get back in the lorry.
The big oaf reluctantly released me and slouched off, leaving me wondering whether I'd have a broken neck in another couple of seconds. As I tried to massage some feeling back into my shoulder, I watched the second man warily. He was a tough, hard-faced-looking individual. But at least he didn't try to tear me into 2 pieces.
You've had a lucky escape.
Yes, so it seems, one way and another.
You took that corner too fast.
Yes, and it looks as if you did just the same a few minutes earlier.
That's right. So I think we'd both better forget about it, don't you?
Well, that's a thought. Is your lorry damaged?
Well, nothing that a lick of paint won't put right.
Well, we've only dented the mudguard. So in that case, we'll get going again.
Yes, you do that.
Your friend's a bit primitive, isn't he?
You're being funny or just plain nosy?
Oh, you're a bit touchy as well.
Janet. Think so. I wouldn't be too curious if I were you, lady.
Well,
pipe down, Jan. We don't want any more trouble.
They are an odd couple.
Yeah, very. I could think of other descriptions as well.
I noticed you weren't anxious to linger.
Are you kidding? Didn't you notice what the large gentleman had in his hand?
No, I couldn't see.
It was a kosh.
Well, I'm not altogether surprised. The other one kept his hand in his right pocket all the time he was talking to him.
Yes, he probably had a gun there.
That's what I thought.
And yet you started baiting him.
I wanted to see whether he'd pull it.
Oh, look, darling, we're not on the stage now. When people pull guns in real life, they're loaded and not with blanks.
Sorry, Michael. I've got used to that kind of scene in Murder Without Motive.
Yes, it is there. But just try to remember that in this case, they haven't got to stick to the dialogue of Act 3. When those sort of chaps start ad-libbing, the going's apt to get rough.
Yes, you're right. And that being the case, suppose you turn off to the left, just along there.
Down that car track? Why?
Because it is a car track, and it's too narrow for the lorry to come down it.
The lorry? Have they started it?
Soon after us. They're just around the next bend, and coming pretty fast.
Well, in that case, I think we'll have our lights out. Oh, this track's a bit bumpy.
Better than a bump from the lorry. I think this is far enough.
Right. See anything?
Just a minute. They've just gone past the end of the track. They're going straight on without stopping. Yes, it's all right.
We sat in the car and smoked to let them get well out of the way. Janet crooked her little finger and linked it in mine, a sign that peace had been restored and the bad temper on both sides was forgotten.
Mickey?
Hmm?
What do you think they're up to?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe nothing. Oh, perhaps we're letting our imaginations run riot. The play's been running too long. I'm thinking too much like Detective Inspector Morton.
Possibly. Yet, I don't know. After all, if we didn't actually see the gun, you didn't imagine the kosh.
Well, that's true.
Ordinary lorry drivers don't go around coshing people just because they nearly had an accident.
No, there's something phony about them and dangerous. Oh, well, anyway, they're out of the way now. Shall we go?
All right. Well, what's wrong? Why won't it stop?
I'm afraid it's not our lucky evening.
Oh, no. Don't tell me you forgot to fill the tank.
Yes, I'm afraid so. I'm sorry, darling. The tank's burned dry.
What about the reserve tank?
Well, I switched over to reserve coming through Uxbridge. I thought I'd make that all-night garage at Amersham.
Oh, there's another one nearer than that.
Yes, well, I'll have to walk down to it and borrow a tin.
I'll come with you.
Well, there's no need. You stay here and rest.
No, thank you. I know the lorry did go by, but all the same, I don't fancy sitting here on my own. I'm not in the mood for admiring the beauties of nature.
Perhaps you're right. Come on, then. The garage you're thinking of is past the crossroads, isn't it?
Yes, but I've just realized they'll be closed.
We'll have to knock them up. Come on, darling. Best foot forward. Yes, we've got 20 minutes walk ahead of us. It took us 25. And Janet was quite right. The garage was closed.
They're probably in bed.
Well, we must get to bedford somehow. I'll wave a couple of quid at them.
If you get the chance.
Oh, don't be like that. Anyway, I'm going to knock until they do wake up.
We're closed.
You see?
I'm sorry to disturb you, but we're in a bit of difficulty.
We're not serving anybody now.
Well, if you could just let us have...
I said we're closed.
Yes, I know, but...
Please, or I'll pick the dogs on you.
Well, how do you like bedford service?
Oh, come on, Mickey.
Well, of all the nerve.
All right, darling, take it in.
But we must have some petrol.
He won't get any by shouting at him. After all, he doesn't have to open up. Come on, let's snoop around the back.
Yes, that's an idea. We might find a tin somewhere. We can leave the money for it.
Yes. Come on, let's go along the fence here.
Look. There's a light in that garage. You can see it under the closed door. Well, they're not in bed at all.
No. Somebody's up, that's certain.
So we'll get our petrol.
Careful, darling. There's something odd about this.
Nonsense. They're just a surly bunch of yokels, that's all. I'll give them a knock on these doors.
Oh, Nicky, please. Let's go quickly. Never mind the petrol. It doesn't matter. Oh, I feel something awful's going to happen.
Well, it's about time. Oh, it's you again.
Don't move, mister, or I'll let you have it. Hey, Mac. Guess who we've got but visitors.
Well, well. It isn't our nosy friends from up the road. So you wouldn't take a hint, eh?
Well, I'll give it to them now.
Not yet. But I've got to hand it to you, Lenny. You were right, for once.
Yeah.
You should have knocked them off back up the road.
Sure. That's what I said.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. We can soon remedy our little error. Step inside, friends, and learn what happens to snoopers.
The invitation wasn't the kind I welcomed, but there wasn't any choice about it. As soon as we stepped inside the garage, Lenny pushed the big door shut. The big lorry was there, quite obviously undergoing considerable alterations. I'd read in the newspapers of the lorries and their cargoes which had been disappearing from the Great North Road. Now I knew just how they disappeared. I wondered what had happened to the real lorry driver and his mate. Looking at Lenny with the tar lever in his hand, I didn't have to wonder very hard. I tried to think of something else. It wasn't a very pleasant line of thought. But there was a third man in the garage. He, of course, would be the garage owner. The man who didn't want to sell us any petrol. Understandable under the circumstances.
Well, you satisfied your curiosity? We'll get on with the business.
No, well, I haven't. Who are these people, Mac?
They bumped into us on the road further up. They had their chance. They had to come following us.
But we didn't. We only came...
Shut up! Can't stand a woman squawking.
I was only trying to tell you...
Don't try and get us anything. Now, you heard what the boss said.
Leave her alone. Look, Sonny. Don't try and play the little hero. Or you'll get hurt. And so will she. Yeah.
But my wife...
I'll do the talking, mister. All right, tie him up, Lenny.
Tie him up? Look, it'd be easier to bash him.
I said tie him up. I don't want him marked. Tie their hands behind their backs with that cord.
All right, just as you say.
They're just trying to trick me, Dave. They're trying to trick me.
Yeah.
Blasted false ending. That's part one of the actor from 11th Hour. Yep.
That's only the first part.
That's the first part. That's the first part.
And that means there's a second part coming, too.
Yeah. There's another... I don't know. Maybe it's just time for another commercial for Gar.
Okay.
Yeah. Another Caps Blue Ribbon.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Department Store Mannequin Dresser Upper.
Mr. Department Store Mannequin Dresser Upper.
You live the ultimate fantasy. Spending your days surrounded by naked women who never speak.
Living the dream.
Wooden nubs, plastic no-nos, artificial hoo-has. You've handled more fake female parts than a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon.
They sure feel real.
Your hours are flexible. Even better, so are the women you're undressing. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Mac Daddy of the mannequins, When it comes to undressing fake women, you're the real man.
Mr. Department Store Mannequin Dresser
Rubber. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, I never wanted that job.
How did they get an approval for that?
Yeah, the guy who created that campaign is a genius, I'm telling you.
Well, yeah, but it wouldn't float today.
No,
oh,
you couldn't get away with it today.
Filled it with air or helium.
Not enough air. Not enough air.
Some of those you have to blow up. But that's a whole other story.
That's a different commercial.
That's a different commercial altogether. Oh, and I've seen some hideous ones online. Oh, my goodness. Online. When I'm watching, like, Pluto TV or one of the other channels on my Roku, there's some really weird commercials. What is wrong with you people?
There's something on the net now. It's like some woman has really bad body odor and has the cure and needs to tell you about it. It's like, really? Okay.
Yeah. Gee, thanks.
That's called a shower, right? Yeah, go take a freaking shower, woman. My God. No, you need to buy this.
Yeah.
Sploosh it everywhere.
If you wait too long, you get the wire brush treatment, but that's a whole other story.
That's another commercial.
Gets the dirt and 10 layers of skin. But I digress.
Mr. Wire Brush Applicator Guy. Yeah.
Don't tempt me. I'll find one close to it. I got a boatload of these. Oh, God. She's horrified.
You guys!
She's mortified.
Mortified?
I feel like I'm doing my job. But.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, the only thing about this 11th hour is... I think it's difficult for difficult for American audiences to necessarily put themselves in the position these people are in. It's a very awkward position. They're driving.
They're driving a lorry. How many lorries are there in America?
There's a lot of lorries.
I drove. Wait. Never mind.
Lorry is just a truck. Yeah. But a lot of people would say, what's a lorry? Not know.
Yeah, I rode a lorry once, but I didn't drive one, you know.
Where's that steel rolling? Good grief.
My goodness.
He had a horse. It was named
You're not getting
Lorry,
off that
yeah.
easy, Dave. You're not getting off Lorry. That easy.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Oh, what the hell?
He had a horse radio. Named Lorry. That's all it was, just a horse.
I was thinking of something else.
Yeah, well, who's the
degenerate? I don't know what you guys are thinking.
Yeah.
Who the hell thinks
a horse
story?
What I call my
bicycle. It was a hobby
horse.
It had a horse head and a broomstick, and he rode it around when he was a little kid.
Yeah.
Named it Lorry.
Yeah.
Where's your mind going there, Dale?
In the gutter. What did you expect?
Boy, that's all I got to say.
You expected so? Oh, the nun is back. The nun is back. I better watch.
Uh-oh.
Hold on, radio.
Yes, sir. Let's wrap up what bit we got, at least of the regular programming. The 11th hour. The conclusion of the actor.
It almost seemed like the third act of the play. I put my hands behind me as I'd done every night for 12 months. But as the cords bit into my wrists, I knew that this was grim reality. With no escape guaranteed by a thoughtful author, it made it doubly frightening.
That'll do fine, Lenny.
Good.
Right. Now sit down on those aljones, both of you.
I'll stand.
Why didn't you sit down before, eh?
Lenny. You're always so impetuous.
What? Impetuous?
You'll have to excuse my friend. He finds words of more than one syllable a bit difficult.
What?
But he's a man of action.
That's right.
Perhaps you've gathered that by now. Now, don't knock him about, Lenny. Unless you have to.
Oh, well, you know I never do. I never do. But some people just never learn.
I think he's got the idea now.
Oh, Mickey, are you all right?
Yes, he's all right, just a bit shaken. He's learning the hard way.
Oh, my wrists. The cords are hurting.
It's too bad. Never mind, it won't be for long. Now, mister, where's your car?
It's up the road. We came down here because
I don't want the story of your life. You just answer my questions, that's all. You get it?
Yes, I get it.
Oh, the learning. Now, get into this car. In the back, both of you. You can take us to where you left your car.
Hey, wait a minute, Mac. What are you going to do?
No need for you to worry, Bert. Lenny and I will look after these two.
Yeah. All right. Now, that's what I want to know.
You just get cracking and fix that lorry.
Look, I'm asking you... Asking. You heard what Max said, didn't you?
Oh, don't you try to rough me, Lenny, or you'll be sorry, Buzzy.
I'll be sorry. We'll be sorry. I could break you in two.
Quiet down, Lenny. Bert knows we've got to have his cooperation.
You bet I do. Just keep remembering that.
All right. No sense in quarreling. You ought to know we can't let these two go. They're in your garage.
Yeah, what do they have? I'm not having anything to do with murder.
Nobody asked you to.
Oh, no. Well, I know enough about the law to know that if you and Lenny knock them off, I'm for it as well. And believe me, I'm not laying myself open to take any 8 o'clock walk with the Englishman.
Oh, you don't want to worry, you know. You'd never be up in time.
Oh, yeah, very funny. But you're not going to do it, see?
Look, we promised not to say anything.
Stay in the back of that car and keep quiet.
But don't you see? Look, we could...
Look, I've all got to attend to you as well.
It's no good, Janet. Not good, shut up. He learns quick. Now get in the front, Lenny. I'll drive.
Okay.
Hey, listen to me, Mac. You drive that car out of here and I'll pick up the phone.
You'll pick up the phone?
That's what I'll do. I'll pick it up where you are, Lenny.
I'll handle it. Look, Bert, you've got it all wrong.
Oh, right, he has.
Nobody said anything about murder.
But you said you were going to take
them. I said we can't let them go. So there'll have to be an accident.
Oh. What kind of an accident?
I think their car's going to catch fire or something.
Good, eh? Catch fire?
Oh, well, if you're sure you can fix it to look like an accident.
Of course we can.
Well...
It's different.
You open the garage door, Bert, and stop worrying. You get ulcers if you're not careful. Okay. Now you get that lorry fixed up. Shan't be long.
I could just make out Janet staring wide-eyed in the dark. And I wondered whether she was feeling like me, that it was all some horrible nightmare. It was difficult to believe that these two men were going to burn us to death in a matter of minutes. But I knew it was true. There were no blood-curdling threats, just a calm, methodical preparation, which somehow made it all seem more horrible.
Did you bring that length of sash cord with you, Lenny?
Yeah, I've got it right here.
Right, we'll need it for the fuse.
I suppose you fellows realize what you're heading into. The police will get you. There's no such thing as a perfect murder, you know.
I quite agree. But this is going to be an accident. A car catches fire. Happens all the time, you know.
You're calmly sitting there talking about burning us to death. You can't do a thing like that.
Why not?
You couldn't be so inhuman.
Look, lady, in my business we can't take chances. You know too much. You've seen us and the truck. You shouldn't have come snooping.
But we never meant to.
I'm not concerned with what you meant or didn't mean. The way things are. Well, like I said, we can't take chances.
But, Bernie...
You won't feel a thing. Lenny will knock you both out first.
That's right.
Providing you behave yourself.
And it'll be a very great
fault. Oh, but not too hard, Lenny, not too hard. You know, that's the trouble with him. He doesn't know his own strength.
How can you be so cold-blooded? Haven't you got any humanity at all?
Can't afford it in my line of business. What's your business?
I'm an actor.
Then you ought to be used to this kind of stuff. Just regard it as a special performance. Without any encores. Is this the car track you came along?
Well, I'm not sure.
Look, up to now, I've been very considerate.
Don't make things difficult for yourself at the end.
Yes, yes, this is the train.
That's better. Is it far along? Oh, no, 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 I can see it. Ah, here we are. How'd you get, Lenny?
Right.
Now, hop out, you two. I said hop out. It'll only make it worse if Lenny has to drag you out. Ah, that's right. Bit of cooperation and you won't feel a thing. Right, once over lightly.
Hold on a minute. I want to ask you something.
Now, what is it, make it snappy?
Just as a matter of curiosity.
What? That word again?
Well, it might as well be consistent.
Well, what do you want to know?
Just what do you intend to do when Lenny's knocked us out?
Quite simple. You see this bit of cord? We soak it in petrol. One end goes in the petrol tank, and the two of you go in the car. We stand back and light the other end. Up she goes. A final curtain, you might say.
Yes, I was counting on it being something like that.
You were counting on it?
Well, sort of. You see, you can't do it. There's no petrol in the tank.
What? Have a look, Lenny. He's probably bluffing for time.
Okay. Well,
that's why we came knocking up the garage. I tried to tell you, but you wouldn't listen.
What is this trouble, what you think? Hey, there's nothing in the tank, Mac. It's a drawer.
And we'll siphon some from our car. There's plenty there. Will Lenny want a drop to get back to the garage?
Yeah, I know that, but what are we going to siphon it with?
Oh, look, a bit of rubber tubing.
Oh, we ain't got any.
All right, so we haven't got any rubber tubing.
Look, I'll tell you what. We could use our car and take theirs. It's a better car.
Look, have some sense. Lummox, the police would know it wasn't their car. No, there's nothing else for it. I'll have to go to the garage and fetch some petrol.
Yeah, well, what am I going to do with this time?
Nothing. Just watch me. That's all. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay.
So we had 5 minutes' grace. But I couldn't see what good it was going to do us. Our hands were tied behind our backs, and I had no illusions there about what would happen if either of us tried to run or fight with our hands tied. I tried to think what Detective Inspector Morton in the play would have done. And then I thought of the last act, Murder Without Motive. It was a slim chance, and it all depended on whether Janet picked up her cue.
And don't move. Or you'll get it now.
My wrists are hurting.
Oh, no, so what? You won't be feeling anything in a few minutes.
That's a line from the play I'm appearing in. You see, we're both tied up and...
Oh, I hope you've got good understudies.
I'm not tied up tightly like this, of course.
And so, you get loose, I suppose, eh? And then the villain gets his, and I'm the villain. That's all right. You know, but you won't, not this time.
Yes, I know, that's the difference. You see, in the play, I say to him, you've been very clever, Barrett, but there's one thing you haven't allowed for. I knew Mary hadn't committed the murder.
You mean you never really suspected me, Bill?
Yeah, just a minute. What are you talking about? What's the caper?
That's what she says in the play. I only pretended to suspect you to put friend Barrett off his guard.
Oh, is that so? Well, he'll have to bring the curtain down now. I can hear Mac coming in the car.
You remember how it finishes, Janet?
Of course.
Then no! It worked. She's out cold. Come on, quickly.
Across the field into that wood. They'll never find us in the dark.
Been a long shot, but we'd have the luck with us. I hope that Janet would catch on, but unless you do it together, it's useless. It's a tricky thing to do, and Janet and I had had a lot of trouble over it at rehearsals. But when you've been doing it for 12 months, night after night, your timing gets pretty good. I butted Lenny in the chest with my head while Jan threw herself against the back of his legs. And that was curtains for Lenny. Well, the police caught them a few days later. But we aren't playing in Murder Without Motive any longer. We find that third act a bit too grim for our liking now.
listening for another mounting drama of action and suspense when we again bring you The 11th Hour.
Well, that was another abrupt ending I wasn't quite expecting.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's what happens.
There you go.
When you have to chase a crazed collie all over the place. But I digress.
So do we have something we can learn from this, Gar?
We do!
Yay!
And if I could scroll faster, we'd do something about it. There we go. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story, number 3.
Wonderful.
Never take a curve. Always ask. There you go.
Okay.
World is safe once again.
It is.
Yes.
Dave, are you familiar with the Springbok African station entity?
Well, it was like the first commercial radio station out there. It was always the SBBC, which is SABBC, which is the South Africa BBC, which at the time was non-commercial. Well, this is the first commercial service and radio service in South Africa, from what I understand. One thing I did want to mention, for those of you who are old humor comedy fans, the passing of PDQ Bach. Peter Schickley had passed away this week. And I did want to mention that a little bit off the air. Yeah.
And did he have some age to him? He that was just a natural something, right?
Yes, it was a natural something, yes.
Wasn't an Italian hitman.
No foul play expected, you know?
Yeah.
When you hit a certain age, it's like he died of old.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's why bother with you know, autopsies or anything like that, you know, when you're 90, whatever.
Well, you have to make sure there's nothing squeaky going on, but yes.
Yeah. Well, I have a...
I'd have something to say, but I think that CW would throw the nun at me again, so I won't just say it.
There you go. Yeah, we don't want to be nunned. We're still acting up tomorrow with an episode of Suspense and Theater 5. That's at 6:30 Eastern. Ends around 8, and then if you got nothing else to do.
If all goes well, Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul, Boy Boy on the Twitches. Go check it out. Have fun, I'm sure.
See, after Horrible Horror, you don't take as long to get to the guy's name as some people do.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah.
There's no stalling. There's no, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, never mind. All right. Tomorrow again, 6:30, we will see you. Thank you for joining us tonight for our 3 fine episodes. And good night also from CW, I imagine. Jeez. Goodbye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Okay.
Good night.
Can you dig it?
Good night, Lassie. All right.
Ooh. Very good.
There you go.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I enjoyed a PDQ Bach in my 20s. because I wasn't exposed to it before.
Yeah, my brother had enjoyed him earlier than I did. I got to appreciate him, like several other people, more as I got a little bit older. and seen some of the other things he did on some other shows. But yeah, it was Peter Shickley was quite an artist.
Yes, and it's well, you don't find a whole lot of, you don't find a bunch of people that are necessarily like, I love music so much that I would love to hear a parody of it. And it's like, but this is great stuff. And it was classical stuff.
Well, he actually had an NPR program that ran for many years.
Yeah.
We used to run it on the station because we were allowed to, because we had our local PBS station, or NPR station, allowed us to use it. So.
Cool.
And he was actually a gateway performance because he led me to the Hampton String Quartet. And they would do albums like, what if Mozart wrote Born to be Wild? That's an actual album. There are at least two albums that the Hampton String Quartet put out, and that was one. And I loved it. It was like, oh, this is just hilarious. It's good music, but it's hilarious. And that's what we got out of Petey Q. Bach and his dry deliveries, setting up the pieces. It was just great.
He will be missed.
Yeah.
Just taking
did,
up
you,
some
did you almost have a whole catalog of his stuff, Dave?
I didn't. I have like maybe one of his albums, but I had actually a couple cassettes. I don't know where they are. But NPR radio show. Here it is. Let me see.
In these days and times, we can go out and do some searching on the web and find more content than we knew was out there, which is just great.
Yeah, I'm looking at it because he didn't call. I forgot what he was called. That's why I was trying to look it up here to see. What did I say? NPR? Did I say NPR? Really? Ah, okay. NPR thing.
I didn't know he had a spot on NPR.
One of his compositions was Concerto for Horn and Hard Hat.
Yes.
The 1812 Overture. Grand Serenade for an awful lot of winds and percussion. Yeah, his public radio music show, Shickle Mix, that's what it was called, aired for 15 years and won 5 Grammys.
Wow. See, there's video content of him. I might toss that into the show tomorrow during the musical interlude, the musical interruptions that happen. What are we showing tomorrow? Oh, yeah, I found last week we ran Reptilicus. This week,
yes.
I discovered I was under the impression that Reptilicus was the one and only Dutch monster film. No, there's one called Terror of the Midnight Sun.
Yes.
And it's awful. And I don't think there was anything we could do to, we just cut it up. I'll present it rather dry. Did he do anything?
I think there were a lot of Norwegian folk in the thing.
Yeah. My producer and I watched it and we're like, what is this? And it was, I don't know. Nothing's explained. Very little dialogue. It was a love interest, but that faded away and then it ended. And it was like.
And then it was over.
There's a thing about. Horror movies. A lot of them can end, just cut off the sound and play Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
A lot of horror movies. That's just all you have to do. Because there's just fire, 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 and that's it. End scene, if you will. And there's some other... Oh, and the other would be there's a chase at the end, so you could drop in Yakety Sax anywhere. That just works.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're
putting little musical interludes in, like, one of the things when I was hosting films that I probably did more than most hosts is I used to call them drop-ins when I used to watch The Ghoul. He would put sound effects or cuts from comedy albums in an appropriate place in the movie for comic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to like doing certain songs, like during a racing or a fast car driving thing, maybe the theme from Speed Racer, or somebody clicks on a radio and I'll put on a polka or something like that, you know?
What did we combined the comedy, the cartoon version of Speed Racer.
Yes.
With the Yellow song of, they have one about car racing.
Oh, do they?
And we mixed the two. And so
cool.
It's like, oh, yeah, and they're driving.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and driving and crazy stuff. And then all of a sudden, dun, 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 here's Speed Racer, and it fits. It's weird. It fits. It really was weird. and that was a comedy segment, but it could be used as a musical segment. And as you know, Dale, I stopped the movie and have a little segment in between, then jump back.
Yep.
We'd put it in there. So that was kind of. Reptilicus was, it was all kinds of bad.
It's so funny. I don't know how many, I know, Dave, you've been exposed to like a lot of horror hosts, and I know you know several, Gar, and it's just interesting to see everyone's different approach to hosting horror movies.
It truly is, well, yeah.
My big nod or pat on the back is if watches the program, and he goes, that was funny. Then I go, well, I won, okay?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've watched many, many, many of your shows, my brother. I've seen a lot of other shows. I don't make it through the show, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I try to keep it going.
And you do.
Try to keep it going.
And you do.
You know. I was just thinking about this earlier, that Horrible Horror is kind of like a mini Jerry Lewis telethon in that it's a race. It's a four-hour live program.
Yeah.
And
it's
I don't
a
know
marathon.
Who's doing that.
It's so much easier, at least I think, for me, to shoot, you know, a number of segments, and you're not live and you're not on for that extended period of time.
Yeah.
And then just edit it all together and make it make sense, you know, or some kind of sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Make it cohesive and flow well. And you doing it live for that long, that is truly impressive.
I just like the opportunity that, like, if you show up, I go, hi, Dale. Oh, my God, Dale's here. Blah, blah, Dale. You know, and
yeah.
You don't get to do that if it's all pre-recorded.
True.
And,
true. That's why we like doing the radio the way we do it.
Yeah.
It's a thrill for me. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like to say hi to Fogs and Girl Bob. And
sure.
We had Gigi Sci-Paper and CW this week.
Snowman
I guess,
James popped in today. Yep.
He did.
I don't know who that is, but okay.
Yeah. Well, he's
I don't
been coming
either,
around.
But
he's
cool
been coming
he,
around.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
So when it gets warm, is he still going to be Snowman James? Or is it going to be Hothead Eddie or what? I don't know. You know.
I don't know. Maybe he's like the snowman from Smokey and the Bandit, Jerry Reed.
There you go.
That's
yeah,
fun
he
stuff.
He might open that up and say, my real name's Jerry, and we'll go, you're dead. And he goes, I know, that's the fun of it. But, you know, I'm amazed that I've actually been doing this 15 years and still going. And it's just fun. It was fun when I started, and it's fun now. And as long as I can get my medical conditions okay, you know, I have a blast doing it.
Yep. Well, I think you have to be enjoying it to do it for that long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Or it's one of those self-tortured dysphobias functions or something. You know? Like,
which is not the case.
You know, I just like the pain. It's like, my gosh.
I like the pain.
Yeah. So Well, I don't know if
makes
I got this
me happy
or not. Yeah, exactly. Was that whole mask thing was interesting in that
That's
the
funny.
Week before that, I got ready. It took hours to get a makeup. I turn it on, and the internet is, you know, and so,
yeah.
You know, I'm like all that time. So I got ready to do the broadcast last week, and I was like, let me put the Frankenstein topper on because it's about the same amount of makeup, but when it goes to remove it, it's a lot less. It all comes off pretty much. And so it's a lot less. So if I get disappointed, I'll be like, well, okay, but I can take it off. And because the other thing, I put it on for 4 hours, and then I was on for maybe 15, 20 minutes of trying, and then had to go wash it all. I was like, that did not work. I didn't get my bang for the buck. But it all falls in with that keep it simple, stupid thing, right?
Yeah.
Yep, the principle of KISS. Keep it short and sweet, or keep it simple, stupid.
I should have just put on a hat.
He had a hat.
He had a hat, but that's okay. Now I've got glue on mutton chops on the side and all kinds of other stuff, and that's okay. It's all fun.
That's a good thing.
So,
fun is good.
You guys got any plans for the weekend? You going to go build a snowman or something? Or?
No, I got a date with a snowblower in the morning because I want to do some grocery shopping. Instead of coming over Sunday, the kids are coming over tomorrow to celebrate both my and my son's birthday. Mine was earlier in the month. His is in a couple of days.
So you're one.
Okay.
Are you 1 year away from retirement there, Dale?
Yeah. And this year had to be a leap year, Dave. This year had to be a leap year.
Had to work an extra day, darn it.
Extra frickin' day.
I thought I would be working up to that magic number myself, and then it got taken away. And I was like, well, okay. That happens, I guess. Yeah, I fully intended. But in hindsight, I never would have gotten into this GAR thing. I never would have met you guys. There's, you know, so many things that were good out of all of it.
I cherish you guys as friends. And, it's amazing to think that all the different turns life has made where this might not have ever happened, you know?
I think that's like that. I think it's like that with anything you you know what I mean? You just stumble into things, and we were lucky to make the most of meeting each other doing this here all together.
Yeah.
You know, each of us has our own little things, although I've been dormant for a while outside of Erie House. Certainly not for lack of things to do, that's for sure. As I'm preparing to hopefully leave the workforce forever and ever, amen.
When
maybe not. I might putz around with part-time stuff, but it'll be fun stuff that I want to do.
Yeah, and the stuff that you can work a little bit and walk away from. It's not something that's going to be, all right.
I don't have to be there for my health benefits.
Right.
I don't have to be there for my mortgage or whatever and bills. It'll be because I want to be there. And as soon as they make me not want to be there, I'm gone.
Yep. All right, I'm done my 4 hours. I'm done. Bye. See you in 2 days, you know?
Yep.
And saying all that, Dale, are you doing stuff now to put things into place so that you can get back into the horror hosting?
Little by little, not at the pace I'd like to, Gar, because there was a time, and of course I had a little more vigor, where I was not only working, I was making shows, and I was helping run Creepy Castle, and then even Erie House TV, and it just, some of it had to give, and there were changes here in the household and what have you, and...
Mm-hmm.
And bringing up the pup, he's no longer a pup. He's a good dog.
Yeah.
He's just a collie doing collie things.
Uh-huh. Yep. Is he into his 1 year yet?
Oh, he's going to be three this spring.
Three? Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's
okay.
A big boy. Oh, my God, he's a monster, Gar. He's 90 pounds.
Wow.
And about 26, 27 inches at the hithers, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's nice.
Yeah. He was barking at something, and it does look like somebody's footprints were coming up our driveway at like 8:30 at night. Maybe they were offering to shovel. I don't know, but I think he scared the crap out of them. my husky did that one night. We got warned about people breaking in the neighborhood, and we were coming home from somewhere, and one of the neighbors said, "You better check your house. There's a lot of people been broken into on our street." So we get home, and I go in the backyard, and it's about this time of year. And I see this set of strange footprints in our backyard going up to the back window. And the footsteps are, you know, I'm trying to figure out how big this person is. They seem to be normal-sized adult shoes. And they're maybe, you know, 1-2 foot apart going towards the window. They were a good 3-4 feet apart going away from the window. They got a face full of angry husky dog.
Yeah.
Scared the crap out of them. Yeah, Stormy didn't take no credit. He was a good guard dog.
Yeah. I was looking today, and today I understood that it's been 10 years since I've had a dog, and I miss a dog. Oh, God. Oh.
You know what's the best thing I read about collies, honestly? They are known as good guard dogs because they have a very loud bark, very good ears. They sense stuff. Being a herding dog, they're sensitive to emotions and stuff like that. But you simply cannot train them to be attack dogs. They will not, unlike a German Shepherd or a Husky, you can't train them to go after somebody. They won't do it. They will only be aggressive if what they consider their flock is under dire attack or something like that, under dire things. Then they might bite. They're one of the dogs that are least likely to bite. I was surprised to see the beagle on top of that list of dogs least likely to bite.
Huh.
A beagle is most likely to bite?
Least likely. Least likely.
A beagle. Oh,
yes.
And they're all bark.
He's too busy howling, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're extremely vocal, but I think that makes them the best guard dog.
Yeah.
Because a dog can sense ill will, you know what I mean? And so they're not a danger unless their loved ones are being attacked or themselves to protect themselves from physical harm. That's what I love greatest about them. Because, A, it reduces the risk of lawsuits. You know, some people have biting dogs.
I cannot come to terms with what people do a lot with beagles, and that is they house them in these kennels outside.
Yeah.
And even in winter, they keep them out there. And, you know, you hear about it later about, you know, all these dogs froze to death. It's like, what's wrong with you people? You know, I'm sorry. My dogs are going to be in the house.
Yeah.
At night. There's no way.
Well, my motto is, if it's not fit for me to be out there, the dog ain't going out there.
Yeah, really. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people posting that with the onset of bad weather. A lot of folks I know on Facebook are posting stuff like, you know, if you plan on leaving your dog outside, spend the night with him.
Exactly. Yeah.
See how that goes.
I saw a really positive information bit earlier that said, a lot of police forces are out there, and if they see an animal out in this, they're taking it. They don't care who you are.
Good.
They don't care what you do. They're taking it, and you're not getting it back.
Good.
You're an idiot.
Good.
You know, because that's
good.
I love this weather, I am not in the weather you're in, but I like snow. And if I lived in an environment where there was snow, and I had a dog, and I would go out and we would play, but then we would both come inside and get hot chocolate.
I don't give hot chocolate to the dog.
No, but the dog would be warming up. You know, I would never.
I'm only good for short bursts in the cold weather, but oh my God, this dog loves it. You know, he's got so much fur.
Yeah.
The weather, he prefers cool weather and stuff. Like when he will, even when he lays down, he finds tile, or he likes to lay on the basement floor. He doesn't lay on the carpet. He finds the cement and lays on that. And I think it keeps him cooler.
With that thick, huge fur he's got, I mean, it's
like a lamb.
I mean,
He is something, when he wants to cuddle with you on a cold night, that is the greatest thing. He's a big, furry fuzzball.
Exactly.
It's like the best stuffed animal you ever had, except it's alive and it's breathing. It's great.
Yeah. And that was, now I used to have, my dogs, both of the ones I had, they knew when it was bedtime, man. They were in bed. And it was just cool that they were there.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Some people go, no, never. I wouldn't do it. It's like, okay, well, you be you.
And some people baby them like their children. I think we're kind of doing that. We're empty nesters since our kids are out of the house. We kind of baby the dog, and she babies her parrot, you know.
Yeah.
So they're spoiled, but they're good spoiled, good-natured spoiled. You know, they're not evil.
Right. And some people just don't get it. And they're, well, that's okay.
Yeah. I think dogs can sense that too. If they sense that they're not, their presence isn't welcome, they're like, okay, screw you too then. You know, I'll go my way.
Yeah.
You go yours.
Yeah. I've never had a pet where that was ever any, they were always part of the house. They were not, part of the family.
Oh yeah.
And
yep.
Oh.
They are family.
Cats
can be amazing.
Big cat.
Well, I would say all animals. I've had a lot of different animals.
Yeah.
I've had raccoons sleeping in my lap. I've had skunks in my lap. I've had possums, squirrels. It's just they're all, part of the team.
Yep. I had a couple, not at the same time, but on a couple occasions I've had iguanas. And they were okay. They were good. But I've known people that had them that went, the lizard actually has a personality and is extremely attached, especially your green iguanas will become extremely attached to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost dog-like in their behaviors.
For a reptile,
for a lower-order animal, they're quite intelligent.
Right. I kind of stick with something that's got fur and not bugs. No bugs, got to have fur, that's kind of where I go.
Yeah. No, a lizard can be cute.
Well, we got lizards here. They're all over.
Yeah. No, I mean pet, like an iguana, a big, fat iguana.
Yeah. I had one exposure to an iguana when I was working grounds with a real estate company. I kept hearing this thrashing in the bushes. Like, what the? Every morning I kept hearing it. What the? Finally, I wrangled this iguana, and I was like, all right. And I put him in the I put him in the shop, and he stayed there for a few days. And I was trying to figure out, this is before the internet that I had access to. I was trying to figure out, what can I do to make this animal, happy and healthy. And before I could figure it out, it got loose and I never saw it again. So back out into the wild. But, that was kind of weird. But, I held it. I touched it. I was, how are you? I tried to make sure it was okay. It didn't bite me. So
that's a good thing.
It was just a big – I had never run across a lizard like that. I mean, it was a 30-pound lizard. I'm like, what the heck do you do with? It's crazy. I never got to know its personality, but I treated it well. Kind of weird.
Yeah, I've seen people have them though, where they're just I didn't have luck with mine, but I've seen people have them where they're just almost like a dog or a cat in their behaviors.
Yeah.
In their attachment.
Well, before
to their
we
kingdom.
Wind up, before we end the conversation for tonight, I wanted to get into this because I had talked to Dave about it. Ran across a television show called Mrs. Davis. It's a science fiction television program. And I was like, how? I looked at the posters and there's a nun. And I'm like, how is this science fiction? Anyway, so it's an artificial intelligence that affects everyone except one person. And and you have to watch it and figure out how she turned into a nun. But she's a nun. And she's the only person the AI has no contact with, no connection, and it has everybody checking her out and going, we need you. And this is her ability to stay away from that evil AI. And a lot of comedy, a lot of weird stuff. And, you know, if you like some unusual sci-fi, I just finished watching it. It's only one season long, I think. It's like 8 episodes and you're done.
Huh.
And it's like
I should probably sneak a peek at that.
If you can, I would. I give it my little nod of approval. I enjoyed it.
Yep. Yeah.
Now I got to find
check
something
that out. But we probably
ought
to wrap things up. Since we don't have the lovely and delightful CW here to take us home.
Somebody open that garage door and let Jimmy Durante out, and we can end this sucker.
Let him out
there
like a cat. Okay, here you go. The one, the only, Sir James.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say
good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night. Gotta have
Pickle.
A...
We've had a few laughs.
Where's Pickle?
And it's time for toodaloo.
Pickle?
Sorry, bull, up we the thing. And
Pickle. Here, Pickle, Pickle.
Good night.
Pickle's got a sore throat.
He got eaten by Pac-Man.
Uh-oh.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
Aw, tis my cue. Exit, stage left.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage.
All right, there
I hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment.
I got an hour
please
of this stuff.
Please drive home carefully and come back again soon.
Not with me, you know.